Buddhism kind of has two pillars, right? Wisdom and compassion. So those are the two directions it teaches in. Wisdom is to understand what is life, and compassion is kind of understand what's the best way to act in life. So it can be broken down further. So that's a baseline. If it's like, what is Buddhism? Really easy, wisdom and compassion. And compassion we call kindness and caring. So kindness to bring joy, and care is to stop suffering. And wisdom we say is joy and freedom. So joy is really just not being stupid, you know. And freedom is not being greedy. You know, those are two things that are going to lead to suffering. And we go a step further. So we start with wisdom and compassion. We go into kind, care, joy, free. And then we say, right, how can we be more precise about what kind is? We would say, as best we can translate it, kindness without ego, caring without a negative personal emotion, joy is without stupidity, and freedom is without greed. So it doesn't just say what wisdom and compassion is, it also explains where they can go wrong and where it can't happen. If you can create that intention, and it's a reflection in your thoughts, speaking, and action, then that's the goal or aim of it all. And your intention is your intention. It's kind of the guiding force behind your thoughts, your speaking, and action. But your thoughts, speaking, and action are your character. And that's the karma that the rest of the world can, or the other consciousness can interact with. So a lot of our character is subconscious. We're not really aware we're doing. Why we stand away, why we look a certain way. Someone says something and you go like, that's like your subconscious response to it. You know what I mean? Maybe you don't really want to be like, what? But your facial expression goes, what? So your whole body makes your character like, I doubt you and I think you don't know what you're talking about, you know? Or that sort of situation. So Buddhism talks about influencing your character so that the way you speak and act influences the world rather than the way the world interacts with you influences you. So it's this kind of ongoing battle. Either the world is making you react to whatever's happening to you, or you're so strong in your intention, in your thoughts, in your speaking, in your action, which creates your character, that everyone around you gets a different sort of feeling. So Buddhism would use the six Bodhisattva characters, and they're called Bodhisattva characters because we have just plain ways to explain the characters, but the Bodhisattva characters put it in a context. So the six Bodhisattva characters are generosity, discipline, patience, concentration, meditation, and wisdom. So we might know generosity is like, I'll share something with you. Sweet, you know what I mean? Hey, why don't I share this case of beer with you? Generosity, you know what I mean? Right up until you've got a hangover and alcohol poisoning. When we talk about generosity in the term of a Buddhism character, we talk about sharing those initial two understandings and practices, wisdom and compassion, broken down into the four eternal hearts. So if you can help someone understand that, and you can demonstrate that activity, and you can be those intentions, then your intention has become your character and is influenced the world. And discipline regards continuing those habits, that generosity, but for a long period, you know, like I can show up tonight and I can speak reasonably well, I like to think, and I can share those ideas. But I also have to get up tomorrow morning and try and pretend to still be that person at 5:15 as I pre-coffee, sit in my massage chair, hoping I'm going to be, you know, rather than grumbling about my client who's, yeah, pick a case, you know what I mean? So discipline is like to continue to do that over time, and to not do it because you're trying to get to something. I'll use exercise because I'm familiar with it. You know, you exercise to get into a particular shape, and then you get to that shape and it's like, I don't have to worry about the discipline anymore. That's like temporary discipline. Bodhisattva character discipline is like, this is valuable, this is eternal, this is always the way something worth value. That discipline stays no matter what. You get somewhere, it's still, you keep going. It's not about where you get to, it's about the present moment acting that way. Patience is the same. Human level patience is kind of like, you don't get a choice to not be patient when you need to be patient. You gotta wait for something, you gotta wait for it. Good character, bad character, still waiting, patience. I was really patient for the food to come out. Now, there's nothing I could do to make it come out any faster. So, is that really patience, or is that like it's forbearance? Patience is more like, in Bodhisattva level, or the Bodhisattva character context, the result it will happen eventually if you stay with the discipline. So it's not a matter of making it happen faster. It's a matter of keeping your discipline and not letting it change because it hasn't happened in the time you wanted. So like when we're impatient for something, sometimes we can give up or do a worse job or be careless or something like that. But in the Buddhisattva character system, it's more like it has value whether it happens right now or whether it happens later down the track. And it has value even after it's happened. So the patience is like no beginning, no end is the phrase we'd use for that patience. And concentration is like it's already going well, but that doesn't mean it's perfect yet. There's always a way to make that very first bit of generosity into discipline, into patience, that little bit better. So it's not being satisfied with, that had a good response, I'll just keep it at this level. It's more like there's always a way to make it finer and more precise and more complete and expand it. And concentration allows you that capability. And when you can exist in those four at a high level, everything you do is at a meditation level. For humans, we might feel like, you're a dancer, right? You know when you just know the next step and you're completely immersed in what you're doing and the music's playing and you know the step and it's like next level joy and you've got no thought for anything else. And it's almost like your subconscious is taking control and your conscious thought just gets to sit back and enjoy the ride. That was my dance move, by the way. The shimmy. That's the closest I can explain to meditation, except with those first four Buddhisattva characters. And when that all aligns into a direction that creates kindness without ego and care without negative emotion and joy without stupidity and freedom without greed, that's when it becomes wisdom. And that's what the Buddhisattva characters are. So Buddhism is wisdom as compassion and compassion, as explained by kind without ego, care without negative emotion, joy without stupidity and freedom without greed, as represented by generosity, discipline, patience, concentration, meditation, and wisdom. That's your kind of like blueprint. And we can go into far more detail on every single word in there.
Can you explain meditation?
I can try, but I can't promise. Because firstly, it's, as I understand it, meditation doesn't just exist inside Buddhism philosophy. It exists in like many different ideologies in using different words and stuff like that. In the context of Buddhism, we might say it's something like mindfulness with the intention of being kind and caring. Not being distracted, not having ulterior motives, not having conflicting thoughts and emotions about the process which you're going through. I mean, it's a process to develop that power. You know, we don't... There's a reason we learn our Tai Chis and our Qigongs and even the Chen Kuns, because when you're going through a practice and focusing entirely on that practice, or when you're going through a dance and focusing entirely on that dance and following the disciplines, pardon me, there's no space for the conflicting emotions. There's no space for the second thoughts. Now, if there is the possibility that you're doing your Qigong to impress someone, or your Tai Chi to impress someone, show them how good you are, then maybe you're not really in meditation. Then you may be really an ego, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There must always be like a sprinkling of that. Or maybe it's not the word ego.
No, ego. Ego's, we use it in Buddhism in a different way. Anything you consider I is your ego. I'm a female, I'm a human, I'm a male, my name's Sean, I'm this sort of person, I'm that sort of person. This is my Qigong, I'm representing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's your ego. So yes, the answer is there is always a sprinkle of it.
Well, it's probably just a different word than like I
don't.
Yeah.
We would use ego for that word in this case.
But you know, when you're proud, like you can be proud.
Proud ego, yeah, like egotistical in the human sense.
Yeah.
This is another one of those places where, in the context of Buddhism, we use the word ego to describe any version of I, whereas in society, having a big ego is like thinking you're the best, you know. But in Buddhism, having a big ego means being so attached to who you think you are that you're not free to be anything else. Let's say you've agree and accept that creating joy and releasing suffering is a perfect goal. In all time, in all space, every life wants more joy and less suffering. There's nothing that conflicts with that. Let's say you've taken that as an eternally perfect philosophy. To create more joy or to help someone lose suffering, you have to do something that doesn't feel like that's who I am.
Mm.
Even if that's who you are isn't like an egotistical sort of person, The part of you that wants to hold on to that's who I am instead of helping release suffering, instead of bringing joy, we call that someone's ego. So it doesn't necessarily mean full of themselves. Sometimes it means just so stuck in what we would say is illusion I. So we might explain that as like, you know, when you're a two-year-old, your four-element body, like the cells that made your body, are none of the same cells as what you are now. We've got science to back that stuff. And what you wanted and what you understood and how you felt, and they were all different things.
Yeah.
You wanted to play and maybe could comprehend a few words in English, and most likely...
Not even that.
Not even English, yeah. Most likely just wanted to interact with your own mum and the few people you felt comfortable with. And then by the time you're 13, a whole new I has existed. The cells have changed and your understanding of your capacity to think and feel has changed, and what you want has changed, and what your emotion is changed. So that I had a whole bunch of egos, and the two-year-old I had a whole bunch of egos, and now the adult I has a whole bunch of egos, but none of them are there in all time and space. You know what I mean? They're all what we would say constantly changing, which is how we talk about appearing form. We know they're not eternal. We know that's not really who you are. That's who you are at this point in time. And when someone holds on to that, instead of doing matching like the true value of life, which is what Buddhism calls it, to create joy and release suffering, that's when they're holding on to their ego. Like, you might have heard someone say, I'm just not this sort of person. And you're like, yeah, often, you know what I mean? I'm just not that sort of person. It's kind of like, I'm holding on to my ego instead of doing something different. And maybe there's a value in that. I'm not here to judge and say right or wrong. I'm saying that's how Buddhism says someone is holding on to their ego.
So even if someone is scared, so ego really covers like a whole...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all of it. From underconfident, you know what I mean? Your ego can be underconfident. I'm not that sort of person. I don't get up on stage and show off, you know. Maybe getting up on stage and showing off at that moment is exactly what's going to make everyone's life a lot better. But you're not that sort of person. I don't want to do that, you know. So that's how Buddhism explains what is ego. The kind, care, joy-free is what we call the four eternal hearts. In all time, in all space, for every life, creating those intentions is, Buddhism says, is more joy, less suffering. That's what we try to develop. And the way to interact in all time, in all space, is generosity, discipline, patience, concentration, meditation, and wisdom. And the reason I trust that, apart from my own observing logic power, is that the source of that has been the source of other information I've seen to be true in all time and all space. How are you going so far?
It's like common sense, but better. Does that make sense?
That's a nice thing to say. Yeah. But that's how I feel, like, almost like I already knew that, but somehow I'd never put it into precise words. What about you, sir? How's it tracking?
Yeah, it's cool hearing all the ideas, because it throws me back to when I first heard them, and back then you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I can remember those words. I think I know the idea. And now I observe it again from now. I'm like, well, actually, back then I didn't really understand it.
No, they were just words.
There's so much more to understand. And I just thought I understood the word joy. I've heard the word joy before, but I didn't really truly understand the different levels to it. So it's quite humbling to think how much I thought I knew, but it's also quite amazing to understand that there's so much more to learn. And yeah, it's really cool to hear all that in such a summary way.
Yeah, like a dog doesn't see colors, right? They see black and white. I think they see red and green, is that correct? Okay, so a dog doesn't see colors. But that doesn't mean colours don't exist. It means the capabilities of that consciousness in that take that form of that. Like a bee can see way more colours than we can see. They see like the freaking, you know, those weird eyes with all the things. So they get all the different refractions of light. One idea in Buddhism is that humans make a very common mistake of thinking our capacity to understand is the highest capacity that can possibly exist. The greatest capacity can only exist on this earth, you know, which is kind of odd given you can look out into universe after universe after solar system after solar system and go, you know what? We probably are the only ones, and even if we're not the only ones, we've probably got to figure it out the most, you know? Yeah. that sounds about right, you know? Yeah. There's your ego, you know? There's your human style ego. Buddhism says there's much more to learn, and that's a humbling thing. But it's not too bad. It actually says that it refers to the consciousness that can think, that can calculate logic. Fish and insects are food, shelter, sex, desire, passion, and physical action. They don't feel emotion like that. You can tell that if you're not a mammal, they won't take care of their young. They just reproduce because that's a feeling of survival, survive and continue to survive. And a mammal like a dog or a cat will feel emotion. And the proof is when they have something that's part of themselves, they protect it, they nurture it. So that's to the emotion level awareness. So these are the chakras as well. Desire, passion, physical action. Those are the first three. Then emotion. And then thinking is the fifth one. So they say consciousness that can reach the thinking level, because thinking can calculate emotion and can calculate whether it's yields something positive or yields something negative, whether it's a good in the long, like it can calculate the long run and the short run. You know what I mean? So they say consciousness that has thinking level awareness has the capacity to learn eternal wisdom, like Buddhism philosophy. And other consciousness is still in the karmic cycle of reincarnation until they can reach that level. So that's like where humans are. We have the capacity to think, but we also have the capacity to be truly arrogant in thinking that because we can think, we have figured it all out and there's no chance anything can be higher. And this is it. You just go after what you want and do what you feel and think your way through every problem and you'll get everything you want. And that's the epitome of existence. You know what I mean? Of course, we know that's not the case, because you take one look at the people who have done that and you see truly unhappy lives with truly lots of suffering. I think what I'd like to do every fortnight is maybe expand on certain parts and introduce extra parts. And the idea is that if you see a logical reason why something doesn't make sense, there's no obligation to agree with it. In fact, it's probably better you are questioning everything, because that's how you get wiser, you know what I mean? But I advise questioning with logic. When someone says, just doesn't feel like that's right, until they can articulate exactly logically and clearly and precisely why that's not right, it's kind of the same as saying, I'm just not that sort of person, you know? It's like it's almost an ego response, which, good, learn to observe it. But that's what we're trying to develop. Let's say I said to you, all the appearing form is constantly changing. There's truly nothing you can hold. You said, I don't know about that. I can hold this cup. And I said, yeah, but the cells that make up that cup are in a constant state of moving. If you take a microscope to them, you won't see something staying perfectly still. You'll see atoms bumping around each other. And if you wait long enough, that change that's occurring will be more visible for human awareness eyes. You'll see that cup deteriorate and break down and stop being a cup and start being bits of tiny rocks that turn into sand. So let's say I said, that's my logic for all the appearing form is constantly changing. No, you cannot hold that cup. It's actually changing as you try to hold it. And you say, I don't know. And I say, all right, well, what doesn't constantly change? And if you don't have a true answer for me, like if you don't have an answer that follows the logic, then that's not purely logical. That's the kind of like, that's where someone's ego shows up. An ego to doubt.
Well, sometimes I feel with the philosophy could take a year to sink in.
More than a year. 12, 13 years, and you still go, ah!
Yeah. It still finds like a depth that, okay, I thought I understand this procedure, but then, okay, there was something in between there.
Yeah.
It's so humbling. Yeah. There's always something new to learn, which is really cool.
Sometimes like, oh, you say, yeah, no, I get it. And then like all of a sudden your walls come up. I don't need to know anything more. I get it.
Yeah. I've got the right path.
Tell me something else.
I'm in the right direction.
Tell me something else. I get it. Tell me something else.
Next time.
Like when you learn Tai Chi or a move and you're like, oh, cool, I get it. Yeah, like that. I don't need to learn anything more. I've got the move.
Don't need to concentrate to make it any better.
Yeah.
Don't need to keep discipline and have patience to keep it going and constantly improving it. No. Got that one. Clean it off.
Done. Someone explains another angle or another way to do the move or in more detail.
Yeah.
You're like, actually.
We'll touch on now the first eternal Dharma truth. Cool, another new title and heading to go on because we just spoke about it. And then I think at that point we can have some tea, high five, bow if we wanted to and call it a day. So the first eternal Dharma truth. Truth, to start with, can be objective and subjective. Well, you should never have carbs after six. Let's say that. Which I don't actually agree with, but I'm just throwing it out there. I eat carbs after six all the time. I feel very healthy. But in a diet scenario, someone might say, you should always do this. That's what creates weight loss. Or that's what creates muscle gain. Or that's what creates whatever. And even if in a lot of cases it does, that's in a case, if that makes sense. You can't say you should never have carbs after six. You can say in the case where you're trying to lose weight and you have a problem eating high sugar foods late in the evening, you should not eat carbs after six. But there's so many like you should in this case that it's not true in all time. It's not true in all space. It's not true for every consciousness. So when Buddhism says eternal truth or eternal Dharma truth, it says means in all time, in all space, for every consciousness, for every case. So it's true for me or for Jono or for Olaf or for you now and always. And that's what we look for in truth. That's what Buddhism says when is wisdom, understanding life. It's understanding the system that's true for every consciousness and for every case in all time and all space. And it says there are three. And the first one is the easiest to grasp, although still not perfectly easy. It says all the appearing form, everything you can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or think is constantly changing. Sometimes you can't see the change happening, but if you can see it for its true, in its true essence, you can. Like you take a microscope to anything, you see all the like little changing cells and like atoms with protons and neutrons going around them. And someone said quarks, but I don't know what a quark is, so.
Even smaller. Yeah.
But they don't just stay They don't just stay still. Nothing stays still. And sound like comes and goes, it passes. You know what I mean? Even if you try and listen for silence, music, and if I turned it off, you'd hear something coming and going from out there. And it doesn't stay. In fact, for it to stay, it has to keep getting created. Does that make sense? And smell, you surely have smelled many different things day to day. Taste, you know, can be plain, and touch can be touch for separate or touch something rough or touch something soft, but it's constantly interacting and changing. And even your thoughts are in a constant state of change. Your true essence, consciousness, just the power to be aware, is like aware of those thoughts and aware of those different lights and those different sounds or silences and those different smells or blockages or tastes or lack of taste or touch or separation. But they all constantly change, and there's nothing in appearing form that doesn't. And that's true for all time, for all space, for every consciousness, for every case. So my question to you is, using your logical brain, is there anything that doesn't fit in that category, that doesn't change, that you see, smell, taste, touch, hear, or think? Good answer. Correct. So that's something we would call eternal truth. So knowing that logic exists and acting accordingly are two separate things. Because from the very first moment we're born, we're programmed to match this society, which is the exact opposite. Hold your body. That's your body. It's not constantly changing four elements. It's not, you're not the pee that just came out. You're not the water before it goes in, even though that's part of the change of the four elements. You're not the food that goes in or whatever else happens to that we're not going to talk about. You know, you're not the emotion that gets expressed with your character. We instinctively, or we habitually, maybe is a better way to say it, live as if it's not constant change. We look for security in holding, even though the guarantee is that that's going to change. And Buddhism says at the root of most human suffering is that blindness. So even though it's not part of the phrasing for the first eternal Dharma truth, when we say all the appearing form is constantly changing, we will finish that by saying you can truly hold nothing. if you have no logic to break it, and you cannot see a situation or for a life that that's not true, or for a time that hasn't been true, or a case that hasn't been true, then congratulations. You know one thing that's eternally true, which is quite surprising compared to how much other, many other things you know that are only temporary. I don't think I could articulate that or complete that thought in my own head this lifetime on my own. I had similar moments of like comprehension, but I was always around that, blinded by what I want, how I feel, what I want to think about right now. But when I heard that and really took the time to observe it, I think at the time, so this is my personal case, at the time I was suffering quite a lot of heartache about something that had happened like a year and a half ago, but I just wasn't letting go of. I just like kept acting like that still mattered, and that wasn't a year and a half ago, that was actually right now that was still affecting me. And I was like, oh, that's true. It's already changing. And actually, my own choice is what makes the next change. And I felt like weight off my shoulders sort of thing. And I was like, that's good. You know, I've been suffering for 2 years and I just keep creating the same sort of suffering. And now there's a really clear logic as to why I shouldn't keep creating that suffering, and I'm going to follow it. And bang, my life was better. And I was like, I'll probably listen to this stuff a bit more now. You know, we'll see what happens, you know. So that was my experience with that. And that's from a catalyst seed was what made me keep engaging and listening. The information came from the Siddhartha Buddha and the other Buddhas who are represented by these pieces of wood. When we bow, we don't do it because they need it. Buddhism teaches no ego. So if they want it, it's already an ego, they're already not Buddha level awareness. But for our own consciousness to say, that's what I aspire to, and I'm going to be respectful towards that, is kind of like the causation for our next moment to be more in the direction of that philosophy. So there's no need for you to bow, but if you'd like to, we're going to go through the procedure and pay our respects to where the philosophy came from.